Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Ma Prem Prarto. Prarto took sannyas in 1980 and is a poet, designer and all-around artist. Prarto offers poetry and creativity workshops in a variety of venues, including the College of Marin in California. I'm so happy to have Prarto on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Prarto, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good, thank you. I'm so pleased to be here.
Excellent. Okay, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
You know, that used to be my favorite question. I wrote for the Osho Times in India, in Pune, and my job was often to interview people who came to visit the ashram and to meet Osho that were interesting people. And so that was always my first question. And the answers were just astounding. I mean, I'll tell you mine in a minute, but like one of my favorites was somebody at a book fair and a book fell on their head and it was Osho. And so things like that. So mine was a little bit like that. I was studying yoga. I'm sorry, my cuckoo clock is going. But anyway, and there was a guru there and I asked him questions and I was very disappointed with his answers. And I was actually really searching at that point, and I went out into the fields crying, and someone came after me and said, "You need to read this book, The Mustard Seed by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh." And so as soon as I found a bookstore, I looked for it. And when I saw his face, it looked familiar to me, and I didn't know why. It gave me chills, and actually inside I said, "Oh no, it's him." And I didn't even know what that voice was referring to exactly. And I bought the book and I underlined practically every line and I wept through it. And then, you know, things, one thing after another, I found that there was a sannyasin community where I was living in Maine in the United States on the East Coast. And I started meditating, doing Kundalini and other meditations. And before I knew it, I was in India.
The question of how people came across Osho is incredible, and that's why I always start with that, because there are so many incredible stories and yours is one of them. So I want to jump straight into a real cool story and really exciting story. You designed the notorious stylized swan, which became the official logo chosen by Osho to represent his work and vision. I really want to hear everything about that, how it happened, when it happened, your interaction and exchanges with Osho, why the swan, and everything else. So tell us how it came about.
Okay, so there was an announcement in at the beginning of the evening meeting. Ananda would come out often and give us messages from Osho. And she came out one night, and this was when it was a very tumultuous time on a spiritual level, on Osho's message level, because it was when he decided not to be Bhagwan anymore. And he for a while said that Buddha was with him and was spending days with him. This is my best memory. I should also always say it that way. I'm sure people have other more precise memories, but it was like that. So he was telling these stories nightly about his interactions with Buddha, who had come into him. In fact, there were Buddhists who came to visit him to see if they could also meet Buddha. But at some point, he said, "Buddha and I are finished because I live too luxurious a life," which was funny because, I mean, he had some luxuries, but they were very few in a certain way. But, you know, like he had a car that was beautiful and he had a beautiful house, but nothing in it really. But anyway, he went to the hot tub, and apparently Buddha thought that was an indulgence. And he said, "I threw him out." This is my best memory. And it was right after that that things really kind of became more amorphous. I mean, we weren't calling him Bhagwan anymore. We were trying to figure out what to call him, and that changed a few times, actually. Then it was right in that time that this message came from Anando, and she said that Osho wanted all the designers. She said, this is a message for designers. And I didn't know if I could actually qualify as a designer. I'd been painting clothing for the boutique for a while, and I loved painting. And anyway, but she said he would like a new logo. And what he wants is a swan lifting off with its legs, its feet dangling, with its feet dangling. So I had a vision at that moment of what that would look like. And in that vision, it was a kind of cosmic egg. And out of the cosmic egg was flying the swan. And I saw it as a design, actually. And luckily enough, the next day or so, I came down with a cold and I had to stay. I stayed at my boyfriend's flat that day. And I drew the swan in pencil that I saw. And part of it's interesting, too, to me that I kind of got in the position. I thought, well, what would it feel like to have that long neck and those legs coming out? So I tried to feel it from my body, and I drew this one. So I knew it wasn't quite right, but I thought, oh, how wonderful. I get to send him something he'll actually look at. So I sent it off the next day to Anando or whoever was taking his mail then, and said, I don't think this is quite right, but I'm so happy to give you something. And then the next day, a phone call came from Anando, and she said, Osho saw your drawing. I mean, just that made my heart leap. And then she said, and he loved it. And I had to sit down. I felt like I was going to faint. And she said, but he agrees with you. It's not quite right as of right now. Well, I don't know if she said as a logo at that point. She just said it's not quite right because he doesn't like pencil. He thinks it's messy. So she said the other part is that I wrote in my note, I'm sending it to you this way because I can't do the same thing twice. I can't do the same drawing twice. And so he said, yes, he likes it, but he wants me to do it over. So that was, to me, it's just a very signature Osho moment that whatever you say you can't do, he'll definitely ask you to do. So I did it over in paint, but I struggled with it, really. You know, I'm trying to make something for the master, trying to make it perfect. Things went wrong, in my opinion. And I sent it in, and it came back that he wanted it for the book. What do they call that? The opening pages. There's a name for that. But anyway, of his next book, which was No Mind, which was full of all this wild time where he was changing his name and his things with Buddha. And he wanted them in the end papers. That's the name. So it was sent off in the galleys, and the designer came back and said that Osho said that the swan in the universe is perfect. So this is a long story. I don't know if you want me to just keep going like this.
I've got some questions. For example, I mean, there are many, so let's just start from the beginning. You mentioned before that he wanted a new logo. So what was the previous logo before the swan?
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, so there had been a couple of logos. I think the very first one was all geometric shapes. And there was a triangle and a circle, and there was, I think, a hexagon around the outside, maybe. That was the original one that I know of. There might have been one before that. And then after that, there were two, actually, they looked a little bit like terns to my view of birds, but they were two birds. One was white and one was red, and they were back to back in a circle. And I mean, they were overlapping one another, and it looked symbolically, I think, to all of us, that he wore white at a certain phase. He always wore white, and we all wore red. And so it looked like it was the master and the disciple flying together. What's interesting, too, about that is that so when this call came out, it seemed like it wasn't that clear whether there were going to be two swans or one. in my mind anyway. And I wrote at one point and said, does he want only one? And she wrote back and said, yes. And I'm not even sure. I think it had to do with his throwing out Buddha and declaring himself a new being that made me think that he wanted one. But later, and she said yes. And later, when I really made the connection between the swan that I was seeing and drawing with the Mansarovar story that he told, which I'll tell in a minute, then I started to think it was us, that the swan was our souls who had been touched by him, finding our own way. Actually, it touches me to even say that, really, because that's where I feel like I am still flapping my way to Mansarovar. So now you need the story, though. So the story he told was, and it was a strange story. I don't know if I've ever verified it. I did talk to some of the bird people about my drawing, but not exactly about the story. But apparently he said that many swans have to break out of their eggs with their mother has already departed. So there's nobody sitting on the nest and the egg just opens alone. And somehow the swan has to find his or her way to the place where swans gather, which is Mansarovar. It is a place where swans actually do gather, that I know, in the Himalayas. And so that was what I saw, was eventually that the swan was us, and that he was hinting at his physical departure.
Okay, well, that's very insightful. It'd be nice to do a little research, factual research, to see if his swan actually do that. But regardless, symbolically, it's very powerful. So going back to some facts, I'd love to know if there is any way we could find the original logos, the one you mentioned with geometric figures and the two birds. Was that logo used in books or any other material at the time?
Yeah, I do believe it's in books, actually. I'm pretty sure I've seen it in the early books. Certainly it was on the front of the ashram. So if you went and looked at pictures, early pictures of Pune, you'd see it at the gate. You know, right over the gateless gate, there's a picture of the logo, and it's changed over time. So you probably could see those, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I never noticed that. I never put attention to logos before the swan in old picture, but now I will for sure. So you gave this beautiful explanation of the meaning of the swan, but you also mentioned a few times about this Buddha situation. Do you think there is any connection between Buddha entering and leaving Osho's body and the swan?
I mean, I guess for me it was... It was a strange time. I actually, see, I must have been getting a cold before him because I had to stay outside, which was very unusual, outside the hall that night because I had a cold, the night that he kicked Buddha out of the out of his body. And so I was sitting out in the garden listening to the, in the ashram, but listening to the his talk. And I just laughed. To me, the whole thing had felt like some kind of drama that was in a way pushing us out of some kind of old religious something. Because there was a whole lot of talk in those days. And I wasn't really part of it. I listened a lot. People who knew a lot about Buddhism and knew a lot about Buddha and traditions, and people were traveling from other countries. Yeah, so there was all that kind of discourse. There was a lot of what felt to me like, it seems judgmental, but it kind of intellectual discourse about what is true and what isn't true, and with a lot of referencing to old texts. And somehow when he finally said, "I'm fed up," I just started to laugh, and I kept laughing. The whole thing to me just felt like a great release. So, yeah, that's an interesting thought, which I hadn't put with it, you know, a swan being released in a way. And, you know, he did say that sannyas is leaving the past. It's not renouncing anything other than the past. So maybe that was part of it. It felt right that we were getting a new logo. He was giving himself a new name at that time and finally came up with Osho. Osho idea was just much more vast in a way, less personified in a way, because he kept saying that the origin was the ocean. And then he also kept saying, wherever, when I go, wherever you meet a sannyasin, you'll taste me like you taste the salt of the ocean.
Talking about their name, Osho, just as we are here, do you know who came up with that? Was someone suggested to Osho that name, or he came up himself with Osho?
You know, that's funny. I'm a little vague on that. It seems like him, but I'm not positive, really. I don't know. It seems like, you know, I do remember this. There, in many Zen stories that he told us, people would come to the master and call them Osho. So it was not something totally out of context. It was an honorific used in Zen. And that was the other thing, that he had basically said that all his teachings were truly Zen. That's what I understood him to say toward the end. And that he'd talked about all the other traditions, but they all were not as pure. To me, it was like Zen. There was no hierarchy. There was no dogma of any kind in Zen. It was a direct experience, was my understanding of what he was saying. So, yeah, so that now we had moved into a new phase. It was pretty obvious, I think, to everyone there that this was a totally new beginning.
Going back to the logo, so he asked for specifically a swan to be designed, and all the designers were called. And I would assume that you were not the only one who sent him some designs. So do you know why he chose yours? Did he give you any feedback?
Well, then there were more little events that happened. So there was a design department, and I was actually working in books then, editing. I think that's what I was doing then. And so so I wasn't even really part of the design team. There was a design team, people who were doing the graphics of the newspaper and the book design and things like that. So he, at some point, this is one thing I heard, he sent a bunch of pictures to the design team, and he said, use this one's head and this one's feet and this one's body and like that. And they were just, some of them were friends, and I knew they were really struggling with all that. So they were submitting things to him, drawings, ideas. And in the meantime, there were several steps with this. So another message came back to me that he loved these end pages, and that he thought the swan in the universe was perfect, and that now he thought that it would be good to simplify the design out of the watercolor, which had all kinds of nuances to it, to make it into a logo for his personal stationery. So that was the next step. And I balked at that a bit because I already was so nervous about all of it. So I went to a designer, Krishna Gopal. She's a wonderful illustrator and designer. And she brought it into a logo form, a cleaner form without all the edges and things. And he used that it was very beautiful for his stationery. He was still working with the design team, as far as I know, and they were still sending in all these different possibilities. I never saw any of them. It's kind of funny. I didn't see what they came up with. But at some point, it came back again that he has decided it is going to be the logo for the whole commune. And then there was a flag raised with it on, which blew me away. And then he said, we're going to create patches that everyone will wear, embroidered patches with the logo on their white robes for the meetings at night. And that sort of happened. There were patches for sale at the boutique. I certainly bought one and put it on my robe, but not that many people did that. But then the last thing that really moved me was that one day I was called to meet Manisha at the gate, at Lao Tzu Gate, where he lived. And she lived there too in that house. And we met with an embroidery designer who was making patches for his robe. So he made, and that was an amazing moment. I didn't have any idea he was going to wear it. And then he went and made these patches, and Osho came out one night with a robe with the patches on his shoulders. And so he namasteed us. You could kind of see them, but when he opened his arms, they looked like they were flying off from his shoulders. And that was a very moving moment for me.
I think I've seen a video of Osho with that robe. And I think I know the person who sewed those swans in Osho's robe. That must have been Vina. I'm going to ask her.
Oh, good. Probably. That's right. Yeah. She was his seamstress. Mm. One other thing is just that he announced at some point when they talked about putting the patches on every robe and things like that, it was announced that he had designed it. And that just opened up the floor underneath me because I felt like it was like a blessing. In fact, when I wrote that story to you, I really started to weep a little bit because it was a kind of saying yes to my interior relationship with him, that he was saying yes to it, that I felt it, but he was also saying, yes, I am in you, with you.
During the interviews, many times speaking, especially with the therapists, they say that Osho used to always instruct them to be empty and he would work through them. And it sounds like the way you are describing this, he designed the logo, the swan, through you. And somehow you made yourself empty and available for him to do the work.
Yeah. 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 The great blessing.
I think we covered beautifully this part. I don't know if there is anything else you would like to add about the logo before we move on.
No, I think that's fine. I mean, I guess it's still flying there, so that's pretty amazing too.
In my sannyas certificate, for example, which I took in 2000, on the paper there is the swan is there. So that's when I first came across the swan and I noticed that the swan was the logo of somehow Osho.
Yeah. You know, the other thing is I did a little workshop Osho. So I'm trying to remember the name. It's the sannyasin community in San Diego. They gave me a logo to put on my car. So I have this beautiful logo on my car of the swan. It's big and shiny. So I'm driving around with it.
Okay. So coming closer to your present day life, you are a poet, an illustrator, very creative person, of course. We can say an all-around artist. So how did Osho inspire you as an artist? And how do you integrate Osho in your work?
You know, when I was painting in the ashram, well, actually, the very first time I went in 1980, I did a whole bunch of groups. That was what we did in those days, therapy groups. But then I ended it with taking a painting group in the garden, Emperor's Gardens. And I did a watercolor there. And we had one giant piece of paper in 5 days. Most people finish their paper in one day, but I took my time and I discovered something. I had taken very little art in school. I studied psychology. I always loved art, but it was like I surprised myself by what could come out. And it still feels that way. When I paint, I have no idea who's doing that. I often think I have no idea how to paint that, whatever it is I'm trying to do, like fire or the night sky. Well, I've done a lot of night skies, so maybe now I have a little bit of a shtick. But mostly when I start to paint, I have no idea how to do it. So it is a little bit like what I described with the logo. There's an empty space. And I will also say that when I think about when I'm feeling down and I think I need to get back to joy, I try to remember when I was the happiest. And when I was the most joyful was when I was painting in the ashram. It was my job every day. And I would wake up in India and I would think, oh, I can't believe that I am entering this day. It was every day. I was so happy to be awake because I was going to go in and hear Osho speak. He was speaking twice a day during that time. So I would get up and go listen to him. And then I would hang out with friends for breakfast. And then I would go paint all day. And I could paint anything I wanted. I was painting clothing at the second round. First, it was greeting cards. Then it was clothing. And I was putting, I don't know, frogs leaping across sleeves, things like that. And and birds flying and whatever. But I could get so lost in it. And so it became, I really felt like it is for me a meditation. And now it's interesting because I'm a writer primarily. I mean, that's how I make my living, teaching writing. I've published 5 books. 6 if you count the little one. And so I do a lot of writing, but sometimes I just get so fed up with words that I have to go to my studio. And when I'm painting, there's almost no words. It's a strange, different world in there, you know, and I'm paying attention to something, impulses or something, so that a whole day can pass, really, without me noticing the time. And the other thing I guess I would say about my connection to Osho with it is, for example, one of my books is illustrated and I did 26 illustrations. And I had a publisher at one point and then I had to publish that one myself. That's the only one I did myself. But when I was painting, I had a deadline because I had a publisher and I had to make sure I got everything done in one summer. And so I would put on Osho discourses in my garden and paint. And that still is my way. If I have a big project, I put on Osho's discourses and I just feel him inside me. That's interesting connection I'm making now that I didn't make before, kind of like what he said about the swan. And when I told you the story about the swan, I felt that it was kind of a yes to me. And I've always felt a little inferior as an artist. And I felt like he said, yes, keep going. It feels like there's a keep going in there.
So I think you already kind of hinted to this, but I'd love to go a little bit deeper. And if you were to say which is the form of art that represents you the most, what would that be?
You know, in the world, people know me as a poet, but I think it's probably painting. It's a little harder to make one's way as a painter financially. I think that's why. But, you know, there is, I guess if I only painted, I would miss the poetry too, because poetry is an interesting thing. And I've used Osho quotes many times about this, actually. He says, a poet, what is it? I'm trying to think exactly my best guess of what he said, but it's using words to go beyond words or using words to deepen the silence. So, and really, when I first met Osho, I wrote a whole book of poetry the first season I was there in 1980 that were all love poems to him. So, you know, it's another form that, and I'm fascinated by words because there's, you know, they're blah, blah, blah. They're part of that. They're part of selling things. They're part of, you know, the whole, they're part of lying. But there is a way to use words that sort of bring silence. And that's what, poems are for me.
What would you say is Osho's biggest contribution?
I'm feeling it really a lot right now because I was just talking to my daughter. I have 2 daughters who grew up with a sannyasin mother. They took sannyas when they were kids. And, we were talking about how at night around here, we go out and howl. I don't know if you're doing that where you live, but it's something that's happening here in America that at like a certain time at night, here it's 8 o'clock, everybody goes out and either some places they beat on pans, some places they I do other things, but here we're howling. And my daughter said, yeah, everybody's becoming like a sannyasin, you know, we're howling and we're dancing. It feels like right now what humanity needs, Osho is giving. And it is a joyful approach to being free of the past. Maybe that's it. You know, it's interesting. I have friends here who are not sannyasins, and they're part of other spiritual paths, too, almost all of them. And they often say, you know, what I see in sannyasins and I see in you is a joy that is just obvious in all of you. And that, to me, is probably the heart of his message, that it's not a path of suffering. It's you can get there dancing and howling.
That's quite a big point you're making, because to bridge celebration and joy with spirituality is quite something. I mean, that's, I agree with you, it's one of the biggest contributions of Osho, for sure. And how do you see Osho being embraced by new generations? Do you think that they're open to it, they're getting into Osho, or they're rejecting Osho, or they don't care anything about Osho?
Well, one thing I would say is I don't think that's an interesting question right there. I don't know if most young people I know don't care. I think that, you know, nonchalance is gone, you know, or I don't know what the word is. I think young people are interested in the spirit. Everybody I connect with are very interested in the spirit. And there is some fear around Osho. I do feel that, you know, there was that film that came out here in America, and I think it's gone worldwide, that was a documentary made, you know, Wild Wild Country. I know probably many people have spoken about it on this channel. So, you know, there's the fear mongering. It's the same old stuff, you know, it's kind of the fear that if one trusts and lets go, what will happen? You know, I think that that's the cultural grip on us, you know, is to be careful. But I do think that young people are, and especially right now, because there is such urgency, and Osho always praised urgency, actually. You know, he always said it was good things can happen in urgent times. And so I do think there's more of an opening, especially, you know, for his methods, his meditations, you know, and that message we just spoke about, you know, that it's not holding back. It's letting go. It's getting larger, embracing with joy. So, yeah, I think this is the perfect time, really, for young people. But I do think there is that, you know, roadblock there of the fear.
It's interesting about this roadblock and fear. Do you think it's more of an internal fear, that an individual existential fear to, you know, jump into the unknown, which is being a sannyasin with Osho, taking risks, or it's also related to the media reporting Osho in a negative way, the Wild Wild Country, and, you know, all the controversies around Osho?
Yeah, I mean, I think really the fear that we carry has been groomed by that same force that made Wild Wild Country. I mean, Wild Wild Country to me is just it is the socially acceptable way of looking at cults, you know. I mean, I've had to deal with this quite a bit. I used to teach meditation at Cornell University, and people loved it. I mean, I had graduate students taking it. I taught there for 5 years, and it was mostly, you know, Osho's meditations, active meditations. And at some point I was reported to the president by a cult awareness network. And so, you know, I had to go through all this, but actually my supervisor totally trusted me. And I explained to him that a cult is really depends on the individual, what a cult is, which is giving away. This is how I look at it, giving away your responsibility for your own life, and that everything Osho did gave it back to us. So it was never giving away responsibility for our own lives. And he loved that answer. So he said, just teach it that way. Don't, you know, keep going and just teach it that way. But anyway, one of the other things I wanted to say, I have a lot of thoughts about this, is that one of the things that frustrates me is that probably there is almost no cultural media, like a movie or anything, that looks at the possibility of someone of a different consciousness helping people move forward and upward or whatever, or finding themselves. It almost always is a negative spin, if you know what I mean. So, like, for example, there are lots of movies about, you know, these poor people, lots of documentaries who were duped by somebody with selfish motives. It's all the society can really think of is sort of these, you know, people taking advantage of our innocence. And it's a sad thing for me. But, and again, I didn't quite answer your question, but to me, it feels like that internal fear of let go is because of our conditioning, which is very strong, and I think it's not even just cultural, it's worldwide conditioning, against letting go to that extreme, trusting yourself to that extreme, that there, it's dangerous, that you shouldn't be doing that. And that's really what the Wild Dog Country, I think, was just feeding on that. You know, it's an old theme. In fact, that's the disappointment in that film to me, is that the people who made it, I did look at the at them, I saw some video about them. They didn't even know who he was, really. And they just knew there was a lot of footage and they pasted it together. But they pasted it together with that mindset because, you know, they'd never seen anything outside it. And, it, you know, there's a huge morality, I think, in the whole world that is based on don't let anybody in, you know, because they'll destroy you. And yet, you know, they're kind of an instance of the same problem. You've let them in and they are destroying you. You know, it kind of sounds paranoid, but, you know, there's kind of this machine that keeps people in line and miserable out of the joy. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
It makes sense. One of the biggest criticisms about Wild Wild Country is exactly that they didn't show anything about Osho. It was really focused on scandals and controversies. And of course, that's what attracts people's attention. Just today, I was, I'm writing an article about that. So I was doing a little research on Google. And if you look at the press coverage of Netflix, Wild Wild Country, there is the word cult in almost all the articles. And in fact, even Netflix itself, the description of the documentary mentioned cult, that basically is a cult. So, And I think for me, this platform, Love Osho, is to give voice to the positive stories, to show how Osho made a difference in the life of so many people and how beautiful you are, how creative, successful. So many of you are actually even very successful in life, but even if there are sannyasins who are just ordinary people, they are beautiful, they are transformed. So I think this is this urge to kind of show the other side, that Osho has always been presented in such a negative way. So that's why I'm asking this question. I want to understand, you know, how to kind of reverse the trend.
I love that, because even just, it comes up all the time for me, because even I went to a social distancing little gathering this weekend and, with a couple other couples, and they were part of the Gurdjieff work and some other, they'd done a lot of spiritual seeking. We were conversing and Osho is never brought up. And even if I bring him up, it kind of, it gets very quiet. And I've seen, for example, in Parabola magazine, which we get here, and Osho had, because I've been in his library, and he was getting the Parabola magazine while he was living in his body. And I've never seen an article that refers to him or that uses his words or that writes about him. It's one of my goals, actually, is to write something that has a positive spin on Osho that gets into that magazine, because they otherwise cover everybody. They cover, you know, Krishnamurti and Gurdjieff and Buddha and, you know, modern people, Father Keating, and, you know, but never a word. And to me, it's just astounding in a way, really. But he's not recognized.
Exactly, right on. I mean, he's unrecognized. There are many reasons for it. But I think if we sannyasins, if we people who love him don't do our part, then who else, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right on. You definitely have the right. He's in you doing this, I think. Just like he was in me doing the swan.
Well, yeah. Maybe, I don't know about that, but definitely I have this urge. Chetna and I, we feel like it has to be done and we want to do it.
I love that you're doing it. Yeah, because I mean, I haven't listened much. I'm very busy, actually. I'm still teaching and I'm even teaching online, so I'm quite busy. But I am so thrilled that all the pictures of the people who I loved and love and who were there with me, it's just wonderful to see them being gathered and telling their stories.
That's so sweet. Yeah. That's nice. So I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
It's my favorite part of the day, because I feel, even when I used to have to go out to work, it was shorter, but I get up. Well, now I'm getting up and sitting every morning because I don't have to go to work. So I'll do that one. So I get up and I sit now for about 20 minutes to a half an hour, just letting the morning come in slowly. Then I take my shower and then I dance. And this has been part of my routine for, I don't know, probably 20 years at least, that I put on some kind of music that is like, it depends on my mood. Sometimes it's like, how do you say that? Deuter, who did the ashram music, you know, the Kundalini and those musics. So sometimes it's him, but sometimes it's somebody with a more voice, more pop, or Deva Premal and Timitan. And I'll dance. And then I dance for a little while, just trying to be, sometimes it's half Latihan, if you know that one, where you just kind of let your body move slowly and then it comes into a dance. And then I let that turn into yoga so that I do sun salutation and some other things. And I even end on the floor working my core a little bit. And then I go for breakfast. And then the day sort of takes me. But what I love about that is that I've learned over the years that if I don't do that in the morning and I say I'm going to do it later, I end up often skipping it. So I make sure I do that every day.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
That's interesting, because the first one that came up was Kundalini, because I have done it for years and years and years with people in the community here and wherever I live. But actually, to be honest, I think it really is Latihan, you know, just being, especially if it's in the dark. And so what that is for me is just standing in the dark, being utterly receptive, keeping the body almost like water and seeing what happens. I can go very deep with that one.
Wow, wonderful. That's a very mysterious meditation.
When I was in Syracuse, I went to Syracuse University to get masters of fine art when I was in my 60s. So that was a pretty wild thing. All my fellow students were in their 20s. And so it was only a few years ago, 7 years ago I was there. And I got very lonely, because my aesthetic was challenged and the kids were all partying and I was asleep. But I would get up in the early, early morning, like at 5 or 5:30, and it would be dark. And that's how I entered the loneliness. Sometimes I would feel the loneliness, so I'd enter it, and it was really transformative. Sometimes it would turn into love right there in the room. You know, the loneliness would just turn. And I'd feel surrounded by Osho and love of the universe, really.
Osho spoke a lot about that. He was saying that, you know, if you feel lonely, don't try to escape, just be with it and go deeper. And sounds like that's what you did.
Yeah. I couldn't help it. I mean, the loneliness was so present. and usually I'm busy, so I don't have to feel lonely, but I did there.
So the last question is, you lead the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in the movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
Wow. I'm glad you saved it to last. That's a hard one in a way. It's so big. I mean, I guess I was moved when I heard you say, you know, you were part of the experiment. I can hear him saying that, you know. He would sometimes say, 100 people, this is what I remember him saying, is all we need for the whole planet to shift. 100 people who become enlightened. And then he would say, where do you think they're going to come from? I'm asking you. And that, you know, is still there with me. It's, that's a hard part, because I often wonder, you know, what have I gotten lost in that's kept me from the great leap? And then sometimes I have a wonderful quote that he, a little note he wrote to me when I sent a message into him, and I have it by my in my studio where I paint. And, you know, I said that I was frightened, that I didn't know if I could, I didn't think I could do this, whatever this thing he was asking. I can't remember exactly, but his response was, what's happening to you is beautiful. Don't push, something like that. I wish I had it here, right here, but it's in a different room. Something like, don't worry about how it will happen. Just stay on the path and spring comes in its own time. And so that's my hope. that spring comes in its own time. And meanwhile, I'm grateful. I think for me, gratitude, which now that's interesting. that makes a nice full circle. When he gave me my name, he told me that my name is Prem Prarto, and Prem is love, and Prarto means prayer. He said that love is the only prayer. And he said, really, it's a moment of gratitude. It's feeling deep gratitude. So I've often, sometimes when people ask them the meaning of my name, to make it simpler, I just say, well, it's the opposite of kvetch, which is the Yiddish word for complain. And it's gratitude. And so what I've noticed, I took a few self-retreats recently at a Vedanta center here, a very gracious place that you do it for free. You just go and be with yourself. And that's what I would touch upon. It's like this pocket of gratitude that's available just for everything that's come my way. And when I'm there, I feel like there's no other place to go. There's no goal to reach. There's no separation. There's no need to get enlightened at that moment, at least. You know, I'm just grateful. And I feel like something grows in me in that, you know, like my boundaries break and I'm bigger than this little body.
It's a great reminder that to be a sannyasin with Osho is ultimately having this goal of getting enlightened. Of course, it's not a goal. And what you said is just, you know, you can just be grateful and you dissolve your boundaries. But ultimately, sannyas, the meaning is that. And Osho came here to help us wake up. So, and I see this in myself. And sometimes I really go to sleep and forget all about enlightenment meditation. It's a great reminder. You know, that's the ultimately being with Osho means having this fire inside to be wanting to wake up.
Yes, that's it. Well, you did your work because I feel grateful right now. And even a little teary. So our session worked for me anyway.
It worked for me as well. You put me back on straight. Now going to meditate immediately.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Prarto. It's been a lovely connecting with you. I wish you lots of love and a big hug.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.